Okay, welcome everyone to another ACRO Resident podcast. My name is Nima Razavian. I'm a PGY4 resident over at Wake Forest and the current chair of the resident committee. Today, we're going to be talking about sustainability, and we're really fortunate to be joined by three residents who are really interested in this effort and championing this effort in the United States. And so I'm really happy to be joined by Rachel Schenker, who's a fourth-year resident over at Duke, Justin Anderson, who's a fifth-year resident over at Mayo, Arizona, and Katie Lichter, who's a third-year resident over at UCSF. So thanks, guys, for joining us. I'm really excited to have you here. So I figured we would first kind of take a step back and give all the listeners, you know, a little bit of a perspective, bird's eye view of, you know, what do we mean by sustainability, and, you know, why is that a topic that we as radiation oncology residents and future practitioners should be focused on?
Sure, I can jump in on that. And first of all, thank you so much for having the three of us on your podcast today and highlighting this topic, which I'm very passionate about and think is, you know, definitely something that all residents should know about. So when we start thinking about sustainability, you know, this is a big topic that has been getting a lot of traction in the US, especially lately. Definitely not a new topic in terms of climate change and sustainability. But I started thinking, what does sustainability mean to me in terms of not only what I'm doing in my day-to-day, but what would that mean if I brought that to medicine? And what would that mean if I transitioned that to the clinic? So when I'm thinking about sustainability, I realize that it's much more than what is sustainable and, you know, how to reduce waste, but really it's thinking about climate, environmental health sustainability. So realizing that climate health is really impacted by climate change. And then within that, there's a lot of topics that we can think about. We can think about environmental justice, how people are disproportionately impacted. We can think about environmental stewardship. What can we do to reduce impacts of climate change? And then what a term that I was unfamiliar with before, but now have become much more familiarized, is what is climate smart care? So climate smart care is thinking about two things: balancing low carbon health interventions, and then also thinking about climate resilient healthcare interventions. So how do we mitigate the impacts? Why is this important? Well, that's what I quickly, you know, want to dive into once I joined radiation oncology and during my intern here. And I found out that there's actually a lot published on this, and people have been talking about it for quite some time. And actually in 2015, The Lancet published a report that said that climate change is the greatest global threat facing the 21st century, but it's also one of the greatest opportunities. And when we think about this, there are numerous publications that have shown the impact of climate change on health populations and communities. And that really is an issue of equity. And that we know today that climate change disproportionately impacts vulnerable populations and communities that historically have been targeted for marginalization. So being very interested in health disparities and health equity, I realized that this has a lot of overlap with that. The other thing about climate change and climate health and sustainability is that despite the healthcare sector actually being on the forefront of this and treating patients who are impacted by climate, the healthcare sector also significantly impacts to climate change. So if the healthcare sector globally were a sector or were a nation itself, it would actually be the fifth largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions, which was very alarming to me, being an intern in medicine. And then when you look at the U.S. is responsible, just the U.S. healthcare sector is responsible for 8% of the nation's greenhouse gas emissions. So just as alarming. And then when we're thinking about the US population, that's just 4% globally. So certainly a lot of emissions are related to our healthcare sector. So that, you know, got me thinking, is there opportunities for impact? Is there opportunities for sustainability, which we'll talk about more today. But I think the last thing about why is this important, and certainly is important to healthcare institutions, that is that sustainability is associated with financial financial impact as well. So for example, just thinking about waste, there's 29 pounds of waste generated per hospital bed each day. And then there's 6,000 hospitals across the US. So this is over 5 million tons of healthcare waste that's generated each year, and over $10 billion are spent annually on waste disposal. So when you're thinking about sustainability, environmental stewardship, are there opportunities to improve this? Absolutely. And I think, you know, that's just one more component of why this is important.
Yeah, I think that's, you raise a really important point there, that when we talk about sustainability, it's not just one thing that we're referring to. It's actually like a really broad umbrella of things. And then there's different ways that you can kind of focus in on sustainability. And I think that kind of transitions to our next topic here. We wanted to kind of give everyone an understanding of, you know, what is some of the current research in sustainability and how does, you know, this work in sustainability apply to radiation oncology? So Justin, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'd be happy to dive into this a little bit deeper. I think in particular radiation oncology, as Katie was mentioning, we might be a little bit farther behind some of the other specialties within healthcare in terms of evaluating our own impact on the environment, on greenhouse gas production. And I think this is important because there are a lot of things that we can consider in terms of how we go about evaluating this and how we evaluate our role in reducing our own greenhouse gas emissions. I think the first things that we can consider are, number one, where are we getting our energy sources from? Obviously, radiation oncology is a very energy intensive specialty. We use a lot of machines and equipment that use a lot of energy, whether we're ordering CT scans or MRIs, PET scans, or when we're delivering treatment with our linear accelerators, or again, newer and upcoming technology with proton beam therapy and even carbon therapy, which is now coming to the US. And so there's a lot of questions about how much energy does that use and where are you getting that energy from? Is that energy that you're getting it from, is it sustainable, and evaluating that and kind of evaluating how can I as a physician advocate for better sources of energy? Sometimes the source of energy might seem out of our realm of impact, though. We might feel that we can't adjust that, but there are things that we can do immediately within our field. We've seen within radiology, they've started to meter their machines and publish papers about how much energy they're utilizing. There was another publication out of Canada where they had to estimate the costs and the value of bringing proton therapy to their province and whether or not it made sense or not. And so they actually calculated the energy costs that it would be, and it was something over $200,000 annually predicted energy costs just to support that one proton beam therapy machine. So I think there are things that we can do within our specialty to define what's our current energy usage. Are there differences between different fractionation schedules? If we're doing hypofractionation, is that more environmentally sustainable? I think all of us would assume so, but we haven't really looked to define what's the difference when we're impacting, again, sustainability and making sure that we're using our resources appropriately. And then on top of that, again, like Katie said, what things are we wasting within radiation oncology? We have a lot of single use items, whether it's masks or, again, getting rid of backlogs or different products that we use on a daily basis. How can we minimize our waste production within our own specialty? Again, we have a relatively small field, but our energy impact is probably outsized compared to others, given the technology that we use. And so I think we're just on the cutting edge. And this year at ASTRO, we saw a number of publications finally looking at some of these topics to start defining our energy usage. And so hopefully, I think we're really excited as a resident group that interest and that research will continue to grow in the years to come.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And as you were speaking, the kind of things I was thinking about was that, you know, it'd almost be really nice to see in the future that if you could, you know, run your LINAC on like a sustainability mode, because, you know, you have those things with your appliances, right? Like you can run your dishwasher or your, washing machine, like on sustainability mode. So I'm wondering if that's, you know, something that, you know, people like Elekta or Varian hopefully will kind of be focused on in the future, because that seems like a really good opportunity to kind of impact some of these things.
Yeah, one thing that I think is interesting with the development of Halcyon and shielded, again, another thing that we don't necessarily always think about, the Halcyon machine is better shielded. So theoretically, you might need fewer materials when you're building a radiation department. So how does that impact, again, our impact on the climate or our sustainability. So I think, again, even just the machines that we're choosing, how energy efficient are they? And when they looked at the MRIs, again, a lot of that downtime is when they wasted a lot of energy. So they found that if you can have fewer machines and use those more efficiently, you're actually going to use less total energy than if you have these machines sitting in a lot of downtime. So I think, again, as we evaluate our practices, as we evaluate, again, when are we using the most energy? How do we do this more efficiently? How do we cool our machines and equipment more efficiently? How do we have more efficient backup generators? Because again, sometimes we'll have double the energy so that just in case there's a power outage, we don't lose power. But again, how can we do that more efficiently? So I think there's a lot of interesting questions and interesting ways that we could go to better evaluate this from a research perspective.
To your point about appliances, one thing that's really interesting too, and this has really come out of a lot of the work that the radiologists have been doing, is that some of these will require federal regulations. And so one thing that is happening right now is that the EPA is actually looking at creating an Energy Star efficiency rating system. So similar to our dishwasher or refrigerators that do have these Energy Star efficiency components to them, the same thing they're looking at building out for machines. So when we as physicians or as hospitals are purchasers or consumers, can we actually go and look at a machine and say, is this Energy Star appliance, you know, is it approved? So that's an exciting thing that's happening as well.
And then when you guys were bringing up the point about kind of waste and radiation oncology, what are the types of like waste products, you know, people should be thinking about?
I think you could look at that in multiple factors. I think our mask usage is one. Again, a lot of our patients require immobilization, whether it's through a mask or some other product. And again, how are those being used and recycled or reused if possible? They're not reusable. How do we dispose of them? I think with brachytherapy, certain centers do more brachytherapy, and those can often be done in the OR. So again, evaluating what you're taking into the OR, what do you actually need when you're in the OR? Because the OR can be a very big source of waste. And so, again, there have been a number of surgical specialties that have looked at reducing their own waste in the OR. So brachytherapy may be a unique area where we can better cut down the amount of products that we're using and decrease our waste. But I think, again, I think Katie may be able to speak to this, but we have different ways to audit our systems and different resources that may help us to better identify ways we can reduce waste as well.
Yeah, I think waste is an interesting component to this. One thing that I'll highlight that that several residents out of Stanford and UCSF created is actually a brachytherapy waste audit toolkit. So to Justin's point exactly, how do we actually measure what our waste is, look at our processes and identify areas, hotspots where we do have a lot of waste and opportunities for improvement, especially thinking about reusables. So we were really excited to launch a brachytherapy waste audit toolkit last spring. And our big pitch is that it's a 6-minute audit. It only takes 6 minutes at the end, in which you go in and you measure the waste, you look at the process of your brachytherapy, the flow, and then you also measure your red bag waste. So one area that's really interesting is looking at red bag waste, because this has a huge environmental footprint and also a significant cost. And a lot of us don't actually know what should be going in red bag waste appropriately. And so with red bag waste, one thing to know is that anything that goes in there has a really large carbon footprint, because oftentimes it has a unique disposal pathway. So sometimes it may actually leave the state and then has to be incinerated and then may come back to the state. So there's a large carbon footprint for actually getting rid of that red bag waste. And so what we were found at UCSF is that we were actually able to reduce our red bag waste by over 30%, which not only has an environmental component, but also a financial component to it as well. So right now with the brachytherapy waste audit, we were excited. It started at Stanford, brought it to UCSF, and then MCW is also piloting it. I think, you know, with waste, the big thing is that we just want to lower the threshold for people to be able to do a similar waste audit at their own institution. And the nice thing with this is it doesn't have to be brachytherapy alone. It doesn't have to be focused on red bag, but it can even be in your clinic to identify areas in CT simulation, just to Justin's point. Are there areas or items that could be reusable? So for example, In brachytherapy, we found a lot of volume of our waste was the foam that was single use. And then we realized just through conversations within UCSF that in the peds department, they were actually using gel and it was reusable. And it's something that was at our own institution and that it was more or less low hanging fruit to make those changes in our clinic. The other thing that I will mention too about research and what residents are doing and how oncologists can think about it is I've always framed it in the idea of how can we deliver environmentally sustainable and equitable care in a changing climate? So to Justin's point, there's two sides of the coin here. So one is looking at how does cancer care impact climate change? And so looking at our baselines through not only waste audits, but also life cycle assessments. So numerous residents are actually participating in that. And that's where you look at a process from start to finish, look at all the inputs, see, you know, what your waste streams are, identify hotspots, more or less get the footprint of care. So that's been one thing that numerous residents are engaged in and we're excited to do. But the flip side of this is how does climate change impact cancer care? So I think that's a really important thing for our field to define and to better understand. So as I mentioned before, climate change really has a significant impact on those that are vulnerable, cancer patients, and those that are historically marginalized. And so one thing that's really important to think about is across the cancer care continuum. So how is climate change impacting screening, prevention, treatment, survivorship? And there was actually a study that came out just 2 years ago out of American Cancer Society that showed that patients treated with radiotherapy during the times of a climate-fueled disaster, such as hurricanes, actually had worse overall survival. And that's really concerning, thinking about, you know, a lot of our patients that are impacted by these events that we're seeing more and more today. So one area that is that we're starting to look into, and this is something that numerous residents are also participating in, is actually looking at climate-fueled disasters. So in California, that would be wildfires. In Florida, that would be hurricanes. Same with Puerto Rico, hurricanes as well. But there's, you know, climate-fueled disasters across the nation. And what we've been doing is surveying radiation oncologists across these states and seeing how they were impacted, not only they themselves, their staff, their clinics, but also their patients. And then you can pull data because we have a lot of data through ARIA, Mosaic, and actually look at missed patient visits. How many patients are not able to come in because of these events? Especially within radiation oncology, we know that patients are very susceptible to worse outcomes when they do miss visits. So this is something that, you know, we're very excited to look into and then can start building out resiliency plans. So how do we actually make our clinics more resilient to these climate-fueled disasters? How do we have appropriate disaster preparedness plans? When we look at NCI centers, we see that only two out of all the NCI centers, only two centers actually have sustainability and disaster preparedness plans. So is this something that we should be advocating for as oncologists? How do we figure out which neighborhoods or which communities are most vulnerable? And how do we start to build these disaster preparedness plans for these specific clinics and communities? So that's another area of research that I think is very important for our field to get a better understanding of.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point about how, you know, these natural disasters that are becoming more frequent through climate change are impacting our patients. And, it, you know, I remember just even being on like social media and seeing when that latest hurricane kind of went through Florida, all of the Genesis Care places talking about like who was closed and like what clinic wasn't open. And so that's a very like interesting thing that I agree we should definitely, you know, look more into. As we were talking, another thing that kind of came to my mind was I'd be kind of curious, you know, to get your guys' thoughts on, you know, how do we think like hypofractionation or the push for hypofractionation is going to impact you know, radiation oncology and its contribution to, you know, carbon emissions and things like that? Because I would think, you know, on the one hand, right, fewer treatments perhaps means less visits, so less like patients driving, you know, into clinic, things like that. But perhaps maybe if we're doing fewer treatments, we're using more energy while we do those treatments, which might, you know, negate, you know, the energy we're saving. So I'm kind of curious. I mean, I don't have an answer for this, but I'm kind of curious what everyone's thoughts are on that.
I can jump in on this one. So I think that's something that a few residents and a few people in general in the field have been thinking about and have started to look at. There were a few abstracts at ASTRO this year that started to touch upon this. And I've done some work in our institution ourselves and looking into our data. And I think we also approach a really difficult and maybe a bit of a taboo topic as well, because I think the first and foremost is you want to deliver the most appropriate care possible. And we're making a lot of assumptions at this point. And what's really important is for to collect this data and to publish it and to share it and to come from different institutions, I think is really valuable because we have different machines, we have different workflows, there's different power from the grid. So it's really important to just get as much of that data as possible. And based on just some of the preliminary data that we've done just from our research, it's really the patient travel time that takes up a lot, and it really depends on where in the country you are. Being in North Carolina, we serve a lot of patients who are driving from very far distances. And to touch on some potential research projects in the future that I think would be really exciting to work on is really finding the disparities. And there are a number of papers and some research out there that is, I think there was one paper recently in the last couple of years that had looked at the decision to get prostatectomy versus radiation based on how close they are to a center. And that can really impact the carbon output of people driving back and forth. So that's digressing just a little bit, but also to your point of, does SBRT use more energy than conventional? Just from our preliminary data, it hasn't really shown it to be too much of a difference. And to go back to just some of the comments that were made about the machines and the work that radiology has done, and I really applaud what they've done in their field. It's really the standby time of our machines that use up a ton of energy also. So I think just coming down to just publishing what we know and just getting it out there and sharing it with each other so we can highlight the areas that we need to really start honing in on to mitigate at this point, because we're making just a lot of assumptions. So it's really exciting to see people coming out and sharing what they know and what they have.
Yeah, this sounds like a super exciting time to be interested in this topic, because it sounds like there's so many different ways you can go about looking into sustainability, and hopefully, you know, by, like you said, publishing more, we can start to then develop like the next step of, you know, what do we do about this? So I think that kind of transitions us well to our last topic, which I figured we'd kind of close the session on, giving our listeners a better understanding of how like residents or people in radiation oncology can get involved in sustainability. So Rachel, I was wondering if there are maybe some tips or places people can go to learn more.
So Katie on the call here has started the task force through ARO, which is really awesome and definitely has been a lot of work, it sounds like. So it's really great how she's pulled together a bunch of residents and attendings who are interested in this. So I think that's a great place to start, and she can definitely talk more about that. But I really think just looking into your own institution and workflow and thinking about ways that it could be improved. I remember thinking as an intern after seeing a massive transfusion protocol and codes, there's just all of this plastic on the ground. And obviously our number one priority is to do what's best by the patient, but there must be better ways to make this happen. And I think we just owe it to ourselves and our patients and everyone we work with. So I think that's one place to start. at Duke, we're really lucky to have the environmental school. So we have some really amazing champions in the field who have looked at the environment from other aspects. And there's been actually a big push at our institution to look into it in the healthcare field. So that's exciting. So if your institution has that, really encourage just sending a blind email. That's what I did. And I've met a bunch of really cool people through that, have some new ideas. So that's been really fun. And then just little ways we can improve our workflow and also for our patients, something that I've started to talk with my co-residents about. And I think a lot of us do this anyway, but looking ahead and seeing what appointments your patient has and trying to make that as consolidated as possible, because that really saves them a lot of time and it saves a lot of carbon and energy into the environment. So I think there are lots of little steps that we can all take, even if you don't want to be in the academic world of it. I think it's important to just make these small steps, because I think it could go a long way if we're all doing it.
So Katie, can you tell us a little bit more about the Aero Task Force on this?
Sure, absolutely. So the Aero Task Force is called CHEST, and it stands for Climate Health, Equity, and Sustainability Task Force. And we started this underneath the Global Health Subcommittee, and really was a lot of effort from Justin as well. So big applause to Justin. And I think the nice thing about the task force is it's a landing spot. It's a collaborative landing spot for residents and now a growing number of faculty who are all, one, worried about this, but two, also are empowered by the changes that we can make, not only in our clinic, but within our hospitals, our healthcare systems, and even locally and nationally. And I think just to Rachel's point, a lot of this is around just asking questions and bringing it up. The number one thing you can do for climate change and for improving patients' care is to talk about climate change and start asking questions and figuring out what are the things that we can do to change, whether they be small things. Patients are coming and going for treatment every day. Can we change our Uber rides to Uber Green? Is that something that we can do? Can we change, some of our products to reusable? And then you can start, within the task force, we started numerous research projects, which we talked about. But I think the number one thing is just to engage more people in our field and be leaders in this space. And I think that's definitely what the task force is a landing spot for collaboration. So we definitely welcome anybody who's interested.
Yeah, and just to build on that, I think the beauty is that there really aren't experts in our field regarding this topic at this time. So you don't have to be an expert to get involved. When Katie, it was about a year ago when Katie kind of brought this idea to the Global Health Subcommittee in terms of things that we could work on over the next year. And so none of us, at least I certainly was not an expert in this area and had very little information or knowledge on kind of where to go next. And so it's been a great experience to be part of a couple of publications now that Katie's helped put together, and then continuing to just inspire other people to join. So I think the beauty of this is that you don't have to be an expert, you don't have to know everything about it, but there's a lot of low-hanging fruit and different ways to get involved. And just like Rachel said, most institutions that we're training at are going to have some emphasis on going green, or some person at their institution who's trying to find ways for your institution to go green. And so I think contacting that person in your own institution, or just bringing up some of these ideas, doing, again, how do we do a waste audit? Can we look at our own internal practices and try and be more efficient? And I think you'd be surprised at how many people are actually interested and open to this idea.
Great. And so I think that's a good place to wrap things up. I'd like to thank Rachel, Justin, and Katie for joining us here today and really giving us some good insight into sustainability and its impact in radiation oncology, giving us tips about what we can do. We're going to have some show notes at the bottom here with different links and resources if you guys are interested. So I'd like to thank you all for listening in today. If you want any more information about ACRO and the ACRO Resident Committee, you can find us online or on Twitter at ACRO Resident. So thanks for listening.